Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
From Autosport.com and Autosport Magazine, I'm Martin Lee. This is the Autosport Podcast. Well, for the final time on a Sunday night, this is your Grand Prix review. Max Verstappen dominated the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Behind him, Charles Leclerc held off a charging Sergio Perez to steal second place in the Drivers' Championship. The main interest, in fairness, in the Grand Prix was the strategy offset between a one-stopping Leclerc and a two-stopping Perez in a very tense final stint. Lewis Hamilton beat Carlos Sainz into fourth off the starting line, but then Sainz got alongside him under braking later in the lap, edged Hamilton off over the curbs. Hamilton, well, a bit like actually Verstappen and Hamilton in 2021, the Mercedes scampered over the runoff area, but got airborne, hit a big curb, and after a big impact, Hamilton would eventually retire with hydraulic failure. Leclerc got second by one stopping, like I say. Perez couldn't make that two-stop strategy work because of, in fairness to him, some driver errors, which meant he spent a little too long in traffic. And although Red Bull told him he'd catch Leclerc by the end of the Grand Prix, he just couldn't overhaul him. Ferrari's Carlos Sainz was fourth. Mercedes George Russell in fifth, despite a time penalty for an unsafe pit release in the path of Lando Norris, who himself finished sixth. Ocon seventh, the only finishing Alpine because Alonso retired. Stroll in eighth. Ricciardo ninth, holding off fellow one-stopper Seb Vettel, who did score points on his goodbye to Formula One today. And some brilliant donuts at the end as well. And just a real happy vibe around the whole weekend with Vettel wrapping up his Formula One career. In the Drivers' Championship, so I've mentioned Leclerc, second. In the Teams' Championship, it was Red Bull, Ferrari, Mercedes, then Alpine did beat McLaren, then Alfa Romeo and Aston Martin, both on 55 points, Alfa win on countback. Today I'm joined by our chief editor Kevin Turner, Jess McFadden, who's been missing for a couple of weeks because of her travels, and our F1 reporter Luke Smith. Now, Luke and Jess, you're both there this weekend. I love the vibe of the Grand Prix. So much, so different to last year. With those posters of Max and Lewis head-to-head, the duel in the desert, all that kind of stuff, which, you know, and then obviously what happened was pretty toxic afterwards. So, I enjoyed Formula One this weekend. It was nice.
Yeah, it's definitely a very different vibe. And that's something I actually said on the grid to one of my friends. Like, it just feels so different to 2021 when it was all this tension and hype and it was just the bitterness of that title fight. It was all so sort of the way it finished as well. I remember like this time 12 months ago, we were sort of like going around saying, well, what's going to happen? Like, are they going to overturn the result? Are they going to cancel the final lap? What's going on with the protests? And now instead today, we've had such a day of like love for Sebastian Vettel, and just the way the paddock has come together for him has been really, really wonderful. And yeah, it's definitely far, far lower stakes it's felt like this year. And obviously we like our races to be exciting and full of action and to have something riding on them. And you don't always get that with a season finale. Sometimes you get it where the championship settled with four races to go, and that was the case this year. But I think that it's been quite nice that it's actually allowed the spotlight to shine on Sebastian Vettel and everyone to be so sort of, I guess, loving towards him and to just show how much he's appreciated. Because say Vettel retired at the end of last season, then we wouldn't have been really talking about him. We would have had the sort of final lap, and then everyone would have been like, oh, Vettel's doing donuts, but oh, Max has won the title, but has he, and blah blah blah. And instead it just meant that we could fully focus on Seb, really. And I think it's all the way through the weekend that's kind of been the overriding story. Like, obviously, yeah, Max won the race and Leclerc has got second in the championship, but I think it's just been wonderful to see the way that the whole paddock has come together for Seb, and that really today was his day.
Absolutely was. Now, Jess, we've not had you on the Sunday Night Podcast for a few weeks now. We'll take it personally. Seriously, it's so good to have you back, and you're there as well, and you've been soaking up the atmosphere. and you were there last year as well, and we certainly weren't recording the podcast as early as this. I mean, it's still 5 hours after the flag.
I think it was 3 a.m. by the time we managed to work out what was going on, if we had the results that we had seen crossing the finish line. But yeah, so it's a much more convenient time, shall we say, to be able to get recording.
What's it been like for you? Because you've done the last couple of races, but with travel, in all seriousness, but it was just because of your travel commitments we couldn't get you on the show, and you've been on nearly every show this year. So what's it been like following Formula One as the season's wrapped up?
It's all right, Martin. You could admit that you've banished me for my...
That's what it was.
My takes.
That's what it was.
Yeah, this year it really feels like we're back to end of school vibes at Abu Dhabi, which is the Abu Dhabi that we had come to know usually, because it's only on a couple of occasions has the season gone down to the final race. It's been nice to have that back, I think, especially after last year. And when you're speaking to people around the paddock, I think the exhaustion of having such a long calendar, and I guess not as long as we had anticipated. We did have Russia obviously drop off the calendar, so we went one race down, but it definitely has taken its toll, I think, on the people that have worked in it, which I know it's great for everyone watching at home, but you can tell there's a lot of people in this paddock that are very much looking forward to the winter break, let's just say that.
And of course it's physically finishing earlier in the year as well. Like, it was so close to Christmas because of COVID and getting races in, so it feels a bit more normal. But it's nice that it's just the whole toxicity of it really wore on me as the winter went on, and even when we came back, I just didn't enjoy that aspect of Formula One. I know lots of people like that gladiatorial aspect, particularly on social media, or they support their team. It's a bit like people who come home when their football team has won or lost at the weekend. That's whether they're going to have a good or a bad night. But I'm like, well, you weren't on the pitch, so you're not, you know, I'm glad you're invested, but it's a sport, and you know, it's a sport we love. So it's really nice. And so did you get a chance to talk to Seb this weekend, or was he swamped?
All of the Autosport contingent that are out here managed to do a track run with Seb, which was, we were saying how very different it was from when Alonso retired. There was stuff done, like we were remembering that the driver briefing room got painted in all those murals, which since got painted over because he came back, and it would be very weird for all the drivers to have to sit in a briefing room with tributes to a guy who's still there. So that didn't last too long, but it was just such a wholesome thing to have organised. And it was Seb that organised that run. It wasn't organised by anybody else. It was the media. He put it on for the media and for the teams because, and he said last night, he gave a little speech just before we went on the run, and he said, you know, this is just something that I've always enjoyed. I've always enjoyed running the tracks, and I would just love to share it with all of you who have been here for my career. And he ran with Mick, and it was so hot and so sweaty, and I had not hydrated in preparation for this. I think I'd had a double espresso before we hit the track, which was in a complete rookie error. But we were all noticing as well, like, the conditions out here are actually, even though we're only a couple of weeks earlier, say, than last year, it's so hot here. Like, this week has been sweltering. I did feel like, oh, maybe this is a little insight into what the drivers go through when they're losing buckets and buckets of bodily fluid and weight because of how hot it is out here. But no, it was just such a really wholesome thing to do, and there's just been a bunch of really wholesome things happening, and I think it's just testament to what a guy Vettel is. There have been so many stories coming out this weekend about how much he's been there for drivers. You know, Ricardo said that he's picked up the phone and called Ricardo at tough times to help him. Max even gave the story of when he had his crash last year at Silverstone and ended up in the hospital. When he got back to the paddock, Seb was waiting for him in his motorhome to make sure he was okay. And there aren't that many people, you know, there are some plenty lovely guys that are driving on this grid, but it just feels like Vettel goes that extra mile, and I don't think there was a bad word to be said about Vettel from anybody, and everybody wanted to make sure that he had the send-off that he deserved, and I think he did. So it was really nice to be here and to see it, and I hope it translated back at home as well, just like how much he's been a valued member of Formula One, and how much he's going to be missed.
Do you think we'll see him back in the Formula One paddock at some point? Not necessarily, you know, testing next year.
So it was interesting, he said. I mean, he said in the press conferences on Thursday, this place has a funny way of being able to draw you back in. So whether or not he does an Alonso and comes back in when a seat becomes available, or if he comes back in a different guise, because I think his campaigning, he did an Instagram Live this evening. I don't know if anybody, again, managed to catch that. It was on just after the a couple of hours after the race finished, but he jumped on Instagram Live and he wanted to explain the t-shirt that he was wearing as he came into the paddock, which had a picture of the world, and it just said the word invitation underneath it. And essentially that was connected to his message after the race, where he's saying that he gave the reasons as to why he is pushing the climate change agenda so much, and he said it had to do with his kids being born, and then he lost his father-in-law, and said that, you know, the juxtaposition of life and death made him think differently about the world and what his lifestyle had been. You know, he was very honest about the fact that I flew around in private jets and I drive a gas-guzzling Formula One car. So I think he knows that he's not lived a perfect life, but now that he knows that he can use his platform to try and drive good, and I don't think he's done with that. So I don't know, maybe there will be some kind of role for him in helping F1 find better sustainability, or, you know, maybe he'll just want to come back to make sure that he's got a platform and can use his voice for good now that he's not burning the fuel, shall we say.
Kev, now Kevin, we got you've got a magazine to get out for Thursday. Last week, of course, green masthead with Russell's first win. Normally, a colour that we've reserved for Autosport turning from red to green when Lewis Hamilton wins a title, but certainly won't be doing that next week. But who's going on the front cover of the magazine? Is it going to be a big picture of Vettel and a small picture of Verstappen? But then again, Verstappen's just had an absolutely dominant season. Is it something like 17? Oh, how many wins has he had with any sprints?
Oh, well, with the sprints 15. As well, yeah. But don't count them. Don't pull me into the sprint nonsense.
Okay.
Like 15 Grand Prix. They're just a little starter to the main course. Let's not get carried away with counting those as well. Otherwise, the statistics will be even more screwed up. And as someone who likes numbers...
Well, six next year.
So. Yeah, well, yeah, don't like this.
Brace for
the calendar
six.
Gets ever bigger until presumably we reach a NASCAR point of 36 races. But it's a tricky one. I have been thinking about that tonight. I think in terms of the content in the magazine, it's going to be a lot about the Grand Prix and the record breaking. I've done a piece on comparing Verstappen's record breaking season versus other great seasons. So I think Max, and of course there's the fight for second as well, which we'll have to weave in there somehow. But yeah, there will definitely be a slot somewhere on there for Seb, because that's the feel good story of the weekend, right? Like everyone likes him. And actually, I think he's always been a pretty good character. I know that he was, for a while, it was, oh, this young German in a team that's never won anything before, and all this putting people's noses out of joint. But actually, you know, he's always been someone more interested in the sport, sports history than a lot of drivers. You know, he corrected Christian Horner over the radio once about previous world title winners. I'm sure we've all seen the video of him reeling off all the world champions going back from now to 1950. You know, that's pretty cool. How are other people going to rock up in their own FW14B at the British Grand Prix as well? Like, you can't not like him, really. And I think that, Lewis Hamilton being outspoken about things he believes in is kind of perhaps added to Seb's feeling of confidence and maturity that, I can have a say as well. And the two of them have been a real force for good beyond F1, probably since the pandemic, really. The last two or three years has been when they've really found their voice. So I agree with what Jess says. I think we've definitely not heard the last from Sebastian Vettel, and I hope we haven't too, but I'd be very surprised if he does an Alonso and comes back and starts any more Grand Prix. I think we're done. I think he's on 299. I suspect as a bit of a kind of motorsport historian, he probably quite likes that as well. That's a nice little quirk. He'll be back, but I don't think he'll be back in as a Grand Prix driver.
But of course, the website is there 24/7 at autosport.com. And one of the articles you can read on that right now is all of our writers talking about their favourite Seb Vettel moments. Luke, I should quickly ask before we get on to talking about Verstappen, what was your favourite Seb Vettel moment that you wrote for that piece?
Mine was the 2013 Singapore Grand Prix, which is a bit of an odd one because it was just another dominant Seb Vettel win through that run of 9 victories at the end of 2013. But that was one of the first F1 races I covered actually on site. And in that race, Vettel had got pole, obviously. Only needed one lap in Q3. Didn't even bother going for a second run. Then start of the race, went off into the distance. And then there was a safety car that basically completely wiped away his lead and sort of made it look like it was going to be pretty tough for him. But then afterwards, he pulled away at 2 seconds per lap. And like that's not a gap you see nowadays in F1. You look back through the record books and like the 88 McLaren or whatever, and obviously the advantage was so big. But I just remember just the way he just pumped out lap after lap after lap and made this huge lead. That was my favourite Seb moment.
Let's talk about today's race winner, Max Verstappen. It was one of those races where I'm sure it's not easy, because it's flippant to say that, but he made it look easy, which is, of course, the hallmark of any great driver, let alone a great double world champion. Whatever tyre strategy Red Bull went with, and today the winning strategy was that one stop. Was anyone catching Max Verstappen today? Could anyone have, zigged when he zagged? Was there any way to do it? Because the Ferraris gave it a go. But it looked like the one stop was the quickest way to run a race today.
Yeah, there wasn't really anyone who could get close to Verstappen today. I think there was a moment when he came out after his stop and Perez was a bit closer than he had been before the stop. And part of me thought, Red Bull might want to maybe do something here just to give Checo that P2 in the championship absolutely confirmed. And obviously that wasn't going to happen because it was just that the undercut was so powerful that Checo had been able to make up quite a lot of ground and get close to Max. And then Max, again, and peeled off into the distance with his fresher tyres. It was all completely under control. Like, there was no point where Max ever looked at risk of losing this race. Start was very clean, very good, and from there it was just pretty much checked out. Perez never got within DRS, I don't think. So it just summed up really his and Red Bull season. They were just in another league to everybody else. The RBA team was always going well around this track. You might not think it has much in common with Spa, Abu Dhabi, but the track does in many ways. It's got these long, long straights, but it's also got these sort of slow speed corners, and it really just does suit the RBA team down to an absolute T. So I think it just allowed Max to bring out the absolute best of that car this weekend, a very sort of comfortable run to pole position, and then repeating that in the race. So 15 wins for the season. I think
one of the best Formula One seasons of all time. I think it's got to be up there with some of the greatest performances. He's been superb this year, and signing off in style, it's just been a very dominant year. And it's weird. I think we'll look back on this year, and there'll be so many Max Verstappen races we do remember. Obviously, I think obviously we'll remember Brazil and what happened there, and there's plenty through the season that you can sort of pick out, and they'll be fresh in the mind. But I think there's also gonna be races where you're like, oh yeah, that was just one of those Max wins, wasn't it? Like, nothing really memorable happened in his race. He didn't have any kind of challenger. He just dominated start to finish, and that was that today.
A few podcasts ago, Luke, that I think you and I were talking about how I kind of needed to recalibrate my brain this year. When you look at Verstappen's and Red Bull's absolute dominance, and it felt to me, without looking at the data on a page, like it had been a more competitive season than it really had. And I think you said at the time to me, yeah, but that might be because of qualifying and because of the you know, whereas Leclerc had like 40-something percent of all the pole positions this year, just couldn't convert them. So it felt like a competitive year. But when you say that, just absolute dominance from Max Verstappen. And that leads me on to the next point, Luke, which is he's off and away in winning today. So let's talk all about second place and therefore who comes second in the championship. Obviously coming after the controversy of the last race. What are your thoughts on how Red Bull could have played it today? Perez, of course, didn't, so Leclerc's got that second, which he seemed really delighted with. There's so many questions I want to dig into. Like, does second even matter? And if it does, because Red Bull have never done the whatever you want to call it, like Triple Crown, constructors, drivers, and a 1-2, which is amazing that they've never done that with their driver pairings they've had. Could they have engineered it in some way? Oh, there's a lot to get into. Look, get your thoughts first on Perez not finishing second in the Drivers' Championship.
Well, firstly, to your point of does it matter, absolutely it matters. Like, you might think, oh, if you're not winning it, then so what? But I'm sure F1 drivers and their contracts have various bonuses and various payments and attachments that are linked to championship position and things like that. So I'm sure for Checo, that would have that's a natural incentive, of course. Also, the pride of, yeah, finishing second in a championship, but over third, you'd always take second every single day of the week. So it definitely matters for Red Bull. Yeah, that's what they wanted. They wanted to lock out those top two positions and really make a statement with that. But engineering it was always going to be quite difficult, because ultimately the dominance of Red Bull meant that really it should have been, yeah, it should have been a 1-2 finish. And basically Max always said, like, I will help Checo if needed. But the only way that Max would have helped Checo is if he wouldn't have won the race. Because say he was P1 and Checo was P2 and had to let Checo pass to or whatever, well, he wouldn't need to, because Perez would have finished second anyway and that therefore beaten Leclerc. So there wasn't really a lot that Verstappen could have done. But he was asked afterwards, like, oh, was there ever a point they sort of asked you to do anything to help Checo? He said, no, there wasn't. He said, but also, I don't think it would be a very nice way to end a season. And again, you sort of put that against what happened in Brazil and think, like, okay, yeah, right. So it's interesting. But I think that for Red Bull today, what cost Perez P2 in the championship and in the race ultimately was down to his tyre wear. And it's weird, because Checo is the tyre whisperer. He's had this reputation throughout his Formula One career, and today though, he actually went through his medium tyres in the first stint way too hard. He pushed and pushed, and ultimately that caused the front right tyre to open up too much, and there was a lot of graining it went through, and that allowed Leclerc to really close up, and then it put Ferrari in a position where it could put pressure on Perez, whereas it maybe been a bit too far back beforehand. So Perez had to come in for this early first stop on lap 15, and that always meant that doing a one stop from there was going to be really difficult. Ferrari then, they brought Leclerc in six laps later, and his fresher tyres worked. He was able to close the gap right the way down to Perez, and it got to the point where Red Bull said, okay, we need to decide what we're doing here. Ferrari were ready as well, because they were like, he's in our crosshairs now, and if you're the chasing car, you've always got that chance to be a little bit more flexible and perhaps positive in your actions. We saw that last year with Verstappen. He was trailing Hamilton, so he said, right, I'll roll the dice. And Ferrari said to Leclerc, box opposite to Perez, meaning if Perez pits, you don't, and if he doesn't pit, you come in. And Red Bull, they brought Perez in. They went for another set of hard tyres and basically said to Checo, look, you've got 20 seconds to make up, but you've got much fresher tyres and you should get him by the end of the race. Checo had a sort of lost time in a lot of places. His battle with Hamilton, I think that cost him a bit of time. He spent maybe a lap longer trying to pass Hamilton than he really wanted to. In the end, he decided against a DRS overtake at the end of the first zone, instead waiting to get him at the end of the second zone, because that's where he'd been repassed by Hamilton. But in the end, it wasn't enough. He finished 1.3 seconds short at the flag. Christian Horner reckons that if there'd been one more lap, that would have been enough to get Checo ahead of Leclerc. I'm not so sure about that. But I think that for Red Bull today, it was just a case that it was such a fine thing that the tyres, which is only Checo's strong suit, it just didn't work out today. He said he's not found the tyres as easy to work with throughout this season, and ultimately that's cost him. And the thing I would also note in all of this, had Verstappen given Perez that position into Lagos last week, that would not have changed this. Perez would still have finished third in the championship behind Leclerc, albeit only by a point instead of 3 points. But yeah, that basically did not decide P2 versus P3 in the championship. Because if it had, that would be one hell of a story for us to tuck into.
Well, of course, last week, Jess, we didn't have you for you to weigh in on that Red Bull-created controversy that they managed to conjure up out of nowhere, all of their own doing. Jess, I mean, feel free to weigh in on that if you want to. But also, your thoughts on how much Max should be helping Perez, if any. And should Checo need any help, he's one of the best drivers on the grid, driving a car that is the class of the field by the end of the season. That shouldn't even be a battle. And you can fight amongst yourselves whether you think Leclerc is a better driver than Perez.
I'm sorry. Leclerc or Perez the best? Jess, you have your bit.
I didn't say he was. I'm saying you can... I said you can fight amongst yourselves whether you think that he is or not.
Martin, you are slowly winding up Kev.
Honestly.
Like a loaded spring.
Kev's got like... He's got a list of things to go with.
My pen's run out of ink.
You wait until he goes. Thoughts on all of that? I mean, that's a lot to unpack and we've only got a limited time on this podcast. but the thing that I found... And what we do have to take into account here is that a lot of these drivers, English isn't their first language, and therefore should we look into word usage as much as I'm about to suggest? Potentially not. But he said it wouldn't be a nice way to end the season had he blocked Leclerc and helped Perez out, but he said in the press conference on Thursday that he's a nice guy. So,
well,
why wouldn't he be nice? I mean, the thing that comes... out of all of this, including last week, Verstappen has nothing to lose and Perez had everything to gain. Now, to your point, should Max be in a position where he has to help out his teammate in arguably the most dominant team? If we're not going to say most dominant car, I think that's still up for debate. But the most dominant team, you would argue no, he shouldn't be that far back and having to constantly ask for help. But he did. It's in the benefit of the team to finish with as many points as possible. You could also argue, actually, that it's not to the benefit of the team to have their driver finish high up because they have to pay them more money. So, I mean, conspiracy theories could be, you know, they could go into overdrive here. But I think Red Bull, and especially Christian Horner, is in a very dangerous and precarious place right now.
In what way?
Everything that has come out of Red Bull since last week has shown that neither Helmut Marko nor Christian Horner run that team. The Verstappen camp runs that team. You could tell by the press release. I mean, the press release they put out explaining what happened last week did not mention Checo Perez once. It only... apologize to Max, and I think that's all you need to know. That's all you need to know about where the power balance hangs in the Red Bull camp. It's purely and utterly in the hands of Max Verstappen, and I think it's an extremely dangerous position for a team to have a driver and the driver's entourage be the one that has the most power. because in theory, no one, not even the owners, should be bigger than the team. But we have an instance now where the driver is bigger than the team, and that is going to be hell to manage. And to be honest, you know, I'm not saying that this is deserving, but the only way out that I can see is that they'll get rid of Horner and bring something else in. I cannot see a way out for Horner right now. He's been completely undermined. He's clearly, you know, the whole team, I'm not talking about him specifically here, because I want to make that very clear, like this is an attack on Christian Horner, but he has been backed into a corner and he has to say yes to Max all the time. The statements that he's given to Sky and to the media since then, it's all talking about these conversations happen behind closed doors, this is an internal matter, but that's because they have nothing to say. If they said, I'm sure, like, what is really going on, they have to keep Verstappen happy because he's their, not to go all Star Wars quote, but he's their only hope, right? Like, he currently is the one that is going to win them the championships. Sergio Perez will not win them championships.
True.
But it's a very different situation. I always talk about the binaries of Lewis Hamilton and Max Verstappen, in that Lewis constantly talks about the team. We're a team, we work together, we rise together, we fall together. Everything's about we are one unit, even though he wields a hell of a lot of power in that team. And I'm sure that there are conversations that are had behind closed doors where Lewis says, actually, this is what we're going to do. But you never, ever get the sense publicly that Lewis Hamilton is bigger than Toto Wolff. In the Red Bull camp, I would argue you don't get that same sense. I think you get the sense of, it probably changed as of last week, but there have been multiple instances where you can see that they're almost afraid to upset Verstappen, and they have to, if he says jump, they say how high. And that's a very, very precarious place for a team to be in, because nobody should be bigger than the team.
What you've just said reminds me that last week on the radio, when they crossed the line, Christian was straight on the radio to Perez to say, I'm sorry. And that felt like that was his natural, as a compassionate human being, as his team boss, he immediately said, I'm so sorry.
After Perez asked for the drivers to be swapped in the sprint, that it wasn't discussed as an option for the Grand Prix itself. Because they're saying that they shouldn't have left it late. They left it to the last lap. Well, actually, if you scroll back through F1 TV and listen to radio calls, even with the slight delay in when we hear the radio versus what we see on screen, wasn't done on the last lap. It wasn't mentioned on the last lap. Sergio Perez...
Oh, there were multiple reminders to Verstappen.
Sergio Perez got it at least three laps from the end, if not four.
Yeah. Yeah,
and you're telling me that they left it to the last lap to tell Max? I highly, highly doubt that. So there are holes in their argument for what happened, and like it does smack. Like I'm so on the. It's more that the way that Red Bull have gone about it that's irking me and making me quite frustrated with them as an entity. But at the same time, like, had we been talking about Lewis Hamilton and Bottas constantly asking for help, then I might have said, screw Bottas. Like, what? Yeah. Get up there and be faster, or get up there and do better. But I think it's the power play that is the more interesting factor here for me when we're talking about this example. Especially when Max had nothing to lose. I think he's come across as very selfish. He's come across as very belligerent. I think he would probably admit that he knows he didn't come across well. I think he was shocked with the level of negativity that he got from last weekend. And I think that you could see that again in the press conference when he was talking about the amount of abuse that him and his family received. Drivers are selfish by design. I think they have to be.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you've won everything. You've won everything. Like, if anything, it makes you look better if you're having to give like a toe to your much slower teammate.
It makes you look far better.
It's just,
if you are helping, you know. Oh, I'll help him out. Go on, guys.
Yeah, I'd like to know what Kev would think about that. Actually,
oh, which bit?
We've got a lot to come to Kev. But I tell you what, we'll take a quick break and make Kev wait another 30
seconds. It'll be worth waiting for.
We'll come back and we'll give Kev the floor. And we'll talk about some other drivers we say goodbye to in Formula One and maybe team bosses that have sat on the pit wall for the very final time. Stick around. Back next.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner. Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
All right, let's talk a lot about how the second place is the story. Who would have thought it of the final race of the season? And whether let me throw another variable into the mix. Add this to your bullet point list of things to talk about. Whether clinching second place in the Drivers' Championship, at least, which is the best result Ferrari have had since 2018, is enough to keep Mattia Binotto in a job when the rumours this week were that he was being lined up to be replaced and that he is not on speaking terms with Charles Leclerc. What? That also seems like a crazy rumour. Where do you want to start, really? Where do you want to start?
I've literally picked up like a stress ball I'm having to squeeze during the course of this. I don't really know where to start. Okay, so first of all, I agree with Jess that Verstappen has the control of Red Bull. I don't actually think it's entirely unheralded at Red Bull, because I think Vettel wasn't told off when he should have been at various points when he was there, because he was the Red Bull protege. They knew they needed to hang on to him. So he got away with things that he probably shouldn't have done. Multi 21, Turkey 2010. I think the difference now is obviously there's no Dietrich Mateschitz above everyone who can say, well, this is what we're doing because I'm in charge. Probably the Verstappen family, he's probably got more clout within the paddock and within the situation than the Vettel clan would have done. And I think probably, as we've just been talking about, Vettel is a fundamentally really nice guy, whereas I don't think that we would necessarily say that about Max. He's still maturing, so we don't know where he's going to be in 10 years. So yes, I think that's an issue. How much of an issue is it for the team? It can go either way. In the Vettel case, it didn't matter for Red Bull too much because it wasn't Vettel going that was their problem. But if you go back to Ayrton Senna at McLaren in the early 90s, it got to the point where he was pretty much calling the shots, to the point where he'd rock up on a Thursday or Friday in 93 to decide, I'm going to race this weekend, all the time while trying to engineer himself into a Williams seat. McLaren spent lots of money on keeping Senna because he was, the thing to have, which Ron Dennis later said, but that actually curtailed our development of all the trick stuff that was on the Williams, which Senna then went and got into anyway. So, and then how long was it after Senna left that McLaren won again? It's 4 years before they even won another Grand Prix. So you can put too many of your eggs in the one driver basket, and that's why it's dangerous to let them have too much control. Having said all that, I don't really have much sympathy for Perez in this. A, because I slightly disagree with Luke in that, does anyone really care about second in the Drivers' Championship? I don't think they do really that much. There might be some bonuses. I take that on board. But I think in 10 years' time, no one's going to care who finished second in the 2022 F1 World Championship, apart from people like us when we're writing histories. But also, the reason that Perez wasn't second in the World Championship is he wasn't good enough. He wasn't good enough today. He hasn't been good enough all season. Today, he locked up after going past Vettel, lost the position to Aston Martin. That lost him track time. Luke's already mentioned, obviously, he lost a little bit of time fighting Hamilton. A little bit of reverse to what happened last year, actually. He hasn't this year been as good on tyre preservation, looking after it as Max. We saw that at Azerbaijan. He hasn't been quick enough. And if you look at the super times gaps across a weekend between the drivers, I was having a quick look before I came on. His is the second biggest gap behind Albon Latifi. is an even bigger percentage gap between Max Verstappen and Sergio Perez than there is between Lando Norris and Daniel Ricciardo, who everyone says has had a terrible year, and it's, you know, where there's no big loss to him going out of F1, which I don't agree with, by the way. So, you know, Perez just hasn't been good enough in that car. And I think it shows you how good Red Bull has been as a team, how good the RB18 is, and frankly, how many times Ferrari have lost points for Leclerc. And to be fair, Leclerc's thrown it off a couple of times, but really, that's the reason there was a fight for second in the championship. And as for how much Max should care about that, do any of the great drivers care about whether their teammate finishes second in the championship? I can't think of any example where someone's... The only thing I can really think of is when Schumacher came back to help Eddie Irvine in 99, but that was to help him win the title. And actually, he was amazingly effective at that at the penultimate race before they got to Japan. But that's literally struggling to think of any other situations where a number one has helped a number two in that way, other than when they've kind of gifted them a win as a thank you, which is slightly different. So... yes, I think Max has too much control at Red Bull, but no, I don't think it's his fault that Perez wasn't second in the championship. Is that a good summary?
Yeah, and my goodness, didn't Leclerc sound relieved?
I think he was mega today. Like that's why I slightly shocked at the question of who's better than Leclerc or Perez. Like Leclerc is a championship contending driver. Maybe he's a little bit rough around the edges. Although I think if you look at the F175. It's quick, but it's peaky. It's a difficult car to hang on to. It took Carlos Sainz, who's a very good Grand Prix driver, half a season to get on top of it. I think what Leclerc did in the first half of the year in particular was championship calibre driving. If you look at their percentage differences, 0.002% between Verstappen and Leclerc in qualifying this year. So that is that's as close as a gap as I've ever come across, and I've been going through... yeah, like a sad archivist. Happy archivist, actually. That's the closest gap that I've come across. And actually, the Ferraris ended up, because of that, 0.017% ahead of the Red Bull over the season. But I think that doesn't reflect their race pace on a Sunday, because obviously that's a different thing. But I think it gives you an idea as to the miracles that Leclerc's performed. He's been hanging it out a bit, as we saw in France, sometimes a bit too much. But he finished second in a car that should have finished third today, and Perez finished third in a car that should have finished second, and that's why Leclerc's the right person to be second in the championship.
What if it's true that he won't talk to Mattia Binotto?
It's hard to believe that, isn't it?
These things are coming out, and it was all that picture or that shot of him sort of getting a telling off earlier in the season. It was. I find the whole thing, like, if Ferrari have. I mean, come on, Ferrari can't make a change at the top. They have massively underperformed. Today, they made the right call, when they haven't always made the right call this year. But it would just be peak Ferrari
change Binotto now, they're more likely to take a backward step than if they keep him. That's not the same as longer term, are they more likely to win a championship with him or not? That's a sort of slightly different question. I personally would keep him there, because if you look at where they've come from in the last 2 or 3 years... you know, they've come from nowhere. Like, we were talking about Seb retiring last year. Imagine if he retired at the end of 2020 after Ferrari's horrendous midfield. Like, that would have been terrible for both Ferrari and Vettel. And they've come an awful long way since then. So, yeah, I think it's a bit early. I'd be very surprised if Leclerc wasn't speaking to Binotto. He doesn't strike me as that kind of guy at all. In fact, if anything, I think Charles is perhaps a bit too nice. I think there are points early in the season where he should have said, I'm the number one. Get Carlos out the way. I need to be getting like some serious, a little bit like Jess said about Lewis. Don't necessarily do it in public, but behind the scenes, like, you stamp your feet and like, I'm the number one guy. Ferrari have taken a very long time to decide who their number one driver is, and sometimes it feels like they still don't know, but it is Leclerc. I'm telling you, it is Leclerc. Back him. Carlos is mega, but Charles is mega and a little bit more. It's him. Yep. Russell and Hamilton, maybe Lando, that are going to be the people that can stop Max. I don't see anyone else being able to do that.
Well, let's get on to, because, you know, time is running on. And I don't want to do basically the season review podcast now, because we are talking about one race and doing our race review. But let's talk a little bit about McLaren. We do say goodbye to Daniel Ricciardo. It just seems like an open secret that he's going to be with Red Bull next year as their test and reserve driver. But also today, Lando got a great start, taking George Russell at the start today and finishing so many points clear of the Alpines. And you can get into that debate again about Ricciardo and the job that he did or didn't do at McLaren. But Lando probably flew under the radar a little bit. He made his joke about, you know, being Mr. Number 7 or changing his number. But, and that sort of, I think, does him a disservice in that he's had a cracker, had a good one today and a good one this year, Luke. And so with McLaren, what's your thoughts on Ricciardo and that partnership there going forward?
Lando's had a brilliant season. He's really, really performed at a very high level. There have been 66 podium finishes in Formula 1 this season, 22 times 3, and 65 of those have been taken by Mercedes, Red Bull and Ferrari drivers. The only one exception is Lando Norris at Imola. He said to me mid-season that it blows his mind that he managed to get that podium. And I said to him today, like, oh, you're the only driver outside of Merck, Ferrari, Red Bull who's got a podium this year. What does that say? And he just went, oh, I'm incredible, aren't I? And then obviously joking and laughed. And, but he said, yeah, it's good. But ultimately, McLaren still lost that fight for P4 against Alpine in the Constructors' Championship. That's what they were gunning for. McLaren have always said that they've had the slower package compared to Alpine, that they stayed ahead far longer than they thought they would. But ultimately, yeah, Lando finished 30 points ahead of Ocon, 41 points ahead of Fernando Alonso. So if Daniel Ricciardo had been that much closer to Lando, then it would have been tilted far more in McLaren's favour. But what they've done, I think they can be pleased with this season. Ultimately, they're a team that aren't going to be fighting for the top three places so long as sort of their infrastructure and stuff is that far behind. It will take time for that to come online. But for Daniel Ricciardo as well, I mean, I think, yeah, just really nice that he managed to sign off with a couple of points today. It's been such a tough season for him. We all know that. And obviously a really rough road with McLaren largely. But I think today it was nice, like all of the team members, they all had cowboy hats and stuff they were wearing to sign him off. And yeah, I think Daniel's very appreciative for all they've done for him, even if this partnership hasn't really worked out. And I think we'll probably get news in the next day or two confirming him at Red Bull for next year in that third driver role. It sounds like more of a like marketing and show runs kind of thing, which is, it's a bit of a shame in terms of that you want to see Daniel Ricciardo in a cockpit, obviously, and racing. And I think that hopefully he'll be back in 24, but he said, look, I want to kind of use next year to work out, do I want to come back? Do I want to keep racing and stuff like that? So he's got his reasons for that, and that's totally fair enough. But I think for McLaren now, yeah, it's just time to focus on the future, and that's Oscar Piastri coming in. I asked Lando after the race that, yeah, Piastri's going to be in the car on Tuesday. Have you guys started to like talk about plans for next year yet or anything like that? And he said no. He said I've met Oscar once, I think. Like, I've not actually had a proper chat with him or anything like that. So that is now the focus from as of, well, what, today now in Abu Dhabi, well after midnight. So it's a good, I think they'll look at this season. I think Lando can look at this season and be very, very proud because, yeah, he's maybe been a bit Mr. P7 at times, but given how far ahead the front three teams are that should occupy the top six positions, then that's kind of the best you can do, really. So, yeah, a really good year for Lando, and I think a good race for him to end on in Abu Dhabi. He even said, oh, I set the fastest laps. That means I must be the fastest driver on the F1 grid. Again, joking.
Jess, your thoughts on those we're saying goodbye to? Daniel Ricciardo could well be around next year if those rumours are true. Mick Schumacher had a good race today, but too little too late, decisions made. Your thoughts on those drivers that we've talked about Vettel, obviously, already, but we say goodbye to?
It's quite, I don't know if we quite expected, maybe it's just me, but I didn't quite expect so much change. I was thinking about it, like how many people we're going to see in their new race suits on Tuesday at the Pirelli tyre test, and how many people we're losing. And there's kind of like, obviously there's teams that are, there's drivers switching teams. There's those that you've already mentioned in terms of leaving altogether. Obviously someone that's gone massively, massively under the radar. And I actually asked a Williams team member today whether or not he was almost relieved, Latifi, that all of this other stuff was going on, so he could kind of just quietly leave the paddock and go on to whatever he ends up doing next. And I don't know, they kind of didn't really give me an answer, but said that he wasn't particularly, I think not particularly happy with the way the season's gone. I think, as you could probably imagine. And you know, Mick, in his responses, I think he's incredibly disappointed to not have been kept on. But as you say, it sounds like maybe he might be going to Mercedes to replace De Vries as one of their reserve drivers. Toto has spoken very positively about him. But again, yeah, I think there's a debate to be had. I'm not sure if you've had a debate yet, Martin, because I've not had a chance to listen to the other.
No, you've missed.
Yeah, to the other podcast. But you know, is the right thing to do replace Mick with Hülkenberg? I would probably argue no.
Shock.
But, hey.
Shock as Jess is anti-Hülkenberg in the car.
Who'd have guessed it? Mick needs time in the seat. Mick needs time in a race seat to work out those rough edges that we've seen this year. He's not a complete driver, but he has acquitted himself well at times. But being a test and reserve and spending time in the sim doesn't achieve that, and we won't know his.
This has really been the first
without a race.
This is the first season he's really been able to be anywhere other than always at the back. I'm not saying you know he's had plenty of time at the back. He's had some rather costly crashes. I'm not saying he lights the world on fire, but with Magnussen, who is the steady constant and the experience, you know, Haas is kind of covered. Now, I'm not saying that excuses some of the bad performances that he's had this year, but I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm going to be pleasantly surprised, Kev, by Hulk's performances next year. But I know I have heard that the team that there was disappointment with his level of fitness at the beginning of the year when he had to jump in the car, and although he did an okay job for someone who has never driven or tested this era of F1 car, he did okay. And yeah, I'm sure he's going to be. He's been using all of his time. You know, again, I can't remember if we've spoken about it, but apparently he gave a PowerPoint presentation, so taking a leaf out of George Russell's book in terms of convincing Günther Steiner that he's ready. I'm sure he's going to do all the prep he can. But I don't know. It's just like, I mean, maybe Haas does just need someone very vanilla.
I think they're isn't that the point? They're both kind of fine. Like, Mick Schumacher is not going to be a future world champion, but I think actually the way he's compared to Kit, it's been nice to have a season where they've been alongside Magnussen, who's a known quantity. Whereas last year against Mazepin, you were like, I don't know. You could both be driving around 2 seconds off the pace and we wouldn't have a clue. Whereas now, so actually, Mick Schumacher is a perfectly solid, acceptable Grand Prix driver. Is he a future world champion? No. And I think Hülkenberg is basically the same, but with more experience, but less recent. I'm not saying I have a preference either way. I think it's pretty...
Oh, Kev, don't sit on the fence. Come on.
For me, I've just always had a bit of a thing about Hülkenberg because he did... If you always look at drivers like coming up through the junior ranks, he set fire to every series he was in. He was amazing. He delivered that incredible pole for Williams in Brazil. Like he's got more of an X factor about him than Mick has ever had. But has that moment now gone? I wonder whether it probably has. Like, are we ever going to see that again? To me, there are two standout drivers from this year from outside the big three, and they are Alonso and Norris. Mm-hmm. And the difference is that Alonso's car doesn't finish any races. It didn't finish today. It's just, what the hell is going on there? Whereas Norris's car finishes. So, but he hasn't got a teammate that's been able to score, so Alpine have won by having two strong drivers, and McLaren lost by having, they've had more reliability and one strong driver, basically. I can't remember where we've gone to that side. Oh, Hülkenberg and Mick Schumacher. I'm struggling to get overly invested in either storyline, if I'm honest. But I'd like to see Hülkenberg do well, just because I've always thought he's someone that hasn't delivered what he's... I think he's under-delivered on his ability, whereas I think Mick is just delivering what we expected.
Let's talk a little bit in the last few minutes about where we head next. And that is, Luke, nowhere. You're staying exactly where you are. Don't check out of the hotel.
I get to move hotels at least. I'm sticking around.
Okay, right. Because you're gonna stick around to watch the tyre test. But it is really interesting because drivers probably not in fully commercially branded race suits. As you mentioned last week, there'll probably be a few logos missing because teams have allowed drivers to leave early and go to the competitors and things like that. Logan Sargeant secured his FIA super license over the course of the F2 weekend as well. So who are you expecting and looking forward to seeing in the cars tomorrow?
Yeah, there's Yeah, thanks, Martin. There's lots of there are lots of changes, yeah, and it's a good chance for everybody to get just bed in with their new teams. And although obviously you don't learn anything about the 2023 car because it's not the 2023 car, it's little things like getting a seat fitting done and sort of like pedal placement and steering wheel and how systems work and everything like that. There's lots of little adjustments that the teams can make and just really understand to try and get the new drivers more acclimatized to their cars. And the other thing is that testing is so limited next year. They get 3 days in Bahrain, so that's 1.5 days per driver, plus obviously a couple of shakedowns. That's all the running you get. So any extra time you can have to kind of speed things up and I guess shortcut this learning curve is really, really valuable. The big one is obviously Fernando Alonso at Aston Martin. He's going to be, he said last week, an all black race suit he'll have. So we'll see. But yeah, it's quite sort of Stig like, right, isn't it? Sort of being all without the proper logos and stuff. But yeah, he, I mean, he, it's been a torrid season for him in terms of reliability, and he just said today, yeah, I'm happy it's finished now, I'm happy I'm done, and that he could just sort of like get on with the next chapter, which is with Aston Martin. And he said, yeah, it's going to be amazing there, and he's very excited and positive about that project. And it'll be a first chance for him to, yeah, get in the car and see how he can get on. I believe Lance Stroll's going to be doing a few runs at the end of the day. I don't know, it sounded like that, but yeah, but it'll still be a chance for Fernando to get up to speed a little bit with Aston. Then obviously Oscar Piastri finally back in an F1 car and with McLaren for the first time. Piastri's been here this weekend, but in like plain clothing, so not like in McLaren gear or anything. I'm not entirely sure contractually where things stand in terms of if he's going to be like in full McLaren gear and stuff, but still, it's going to be a chance for him to, again, get up to speed and see what life with McLaren is like and give him a first taste. Pierre Gasly, he's going to be with Alpine, of course. He's the man replacing Fernando Alonso. We had an interesting media session with Otmar Szafnauer after the race, and he said, asked him about sort of the season and politically, like how tough he found the Piastri court case. And he said, well, it's something we had to go through. And he said, at the end of all of it, I think we've ended up with the better driver. And that was really, really interesting. I thought it struck me as being like, okay, I mean, and it's like, well, maybe you would say that because ultimately you that's how the case panned out. But he said, hey, look, but he's a Grand Prix winner, he's established, he's still young, so yeah, I think we've actually ended up better off there. Yeah, I mean, that's probably a whole nother podcast when we come into the start of next season.
I think we should take a bet. Which will explode first, the Alonso and Stroll situation? By Stroll, I mean Stroll Senior. Or will it be the two French talents at Alpine? I think both of those have got absolute train wreck written over them, which could be good for your headlines next year, I reckon, Luke.
Interesting. I do also, I actually want to tell a little story about Alpine and mention them, because it's on Saturday, Otmar Szafnauer hosted a roundtable media session that John Noble, our colleague from motorsport.com, attended. After that session happened, a few people said to me, they're like, oh, have you heard what Otmar said about you? And I was like, no, what's been going on there? And Otmar apparently went round the media session and said, right, where did everyone say we would finish this season? And everyone said, well, either like fourth or fifth or sixth, or I can't remember. And then apparently he said, oh, well, Luca Autosport, he said we finished eighth. And I was like, oh, yeah, and I did. There was a video that came out in testing where I said, I think they're going to finish eighth and be the disappointment of this season, because their first test was terrible. And Laurent Rossi, the Alpine CEO, said on Saturday that they were a shambles after the first test. So that kind of shows that, yeah, I was kind of semi-justified in what I said. But clearly that was used as some kind of motivation, I think. And then today we were working out who goes to what media sessions. And I said, no, I'll go to Otmar. I'm happy to take it on the chin and say, yeah, I got it wrong and whatever. And I went into Alpine and I sat down waiting for him. And then over to me came Alain Permain, their sporting director, and Laurent Rossi, the big boss of Alpine. And Alain said, oh, we've just been watching your video where you said we finish eighth and we would be the disappointment of the season. I was like, oh, here we go. And Permain was like, yeah, quite the expert. And I said, yeah, look, fair play, lads, like, I got that wrong, totally fair, well done, congratulations, shook hands with them and everything. And then Otmar came over to start the session. I said, oh, well, Otmar, some media are writing you off pre-season saying you might finish as low as eighth. Like, who would say that? And he said, eighth? How on earth did you think eighth? And I said, yeah, maybe I'm in the wrong job. I don't know. But no, it was all good. And like, and one of the workers at Alpine messaged me to say, yeah, you handled that really well. And again, I'm happy to, I think it's important that we do make these kind of predictions and that we are opinionated in terms of what we say. Obviously, you want to do that with, you can't just say things for the sake of it. It's got to have some sort of basis. But yeah, but also have the sort of the gumption to say, look, yeah, I got it wrong, fair play lads, because Alpine did a great job this year to beat McLaren to that position. They said they don't regret going for the aggressive strategy with the car in terms of going for pace over reliability, and yeah, very well deserved. Esteban Ocon, really good drive from him today as well, I think, and they've done, I think, a good job this year. So well done Alpine. Thank you for consuming our content and watching our videos and reading our articles, and yeah, we'll see how my mystic sort of predictions go for next year. But we've also got some youngsters in. Jack Doohan will be in the second Alpine car, Felipe Drugovic will be in the Aston Martin, Logan Sargeant as well. I think tomorrow we should get sort of formal confirmation, basically he will be racing for Williams next year, even though we know that is the case, but that'll be another chance for him to get up speed before his debut F1 season. And yeah, I think it should be a pretty exciting test as tests go, and if they can be exciting.
And with so little before the testing, as you've mentioned already, next year, how they end this year is incredibly, incredibly important. Of course, there'll be development over the winter, but just whether people leave on a high or a low, coming back to that Leclerc thing as well, about leaving on a high and feeling like they're buoyed by the last race of the year. Shouldn't matter, but it totally does. Jess, thank you very much for everything that you've done on the Autosport podcast this year. And what a year it's been. Again, without doing the season podcast review, safe travels back home over the next few days. How are you feeling about how Formula One's wrapped up this year?
I can't believe how quickly this season has felt like it's gone by. I know it's not quite 12 months since we were here wrapping up the 2021 season, but I can't believe that's it. I'm a little bit worried about how I might feel tomorrow. I mean, you always get the post-season blues when you realise that there's no more racing to go to and that we're going to go quiet for, almost 2 months, probably.
You're invited to one of the top 10 podcasts then, Jess. You can be a guest on one of those.
Yeah.
You can come and argue with me about other stuff. It's fine. We can get through the winter.
We've got the Autosport Awards and everything to look forward to. So that's going to be coming up 2 weeks. Well, my time, 2 weeks yesterday, mine and Luke's time. two weeks on Sunday. But yeah, we're going to have plenty to keep ourselves busy with. I mean, there's still so much, I think, left to unwrap about this season, even if it wasn't as dramatic, let's say, as last season. That will keep us busy for the winter break. Luke and I have already been plotting what videos we're going to be putting out over the winter period, because we've realised that there's some cracking storylines that we want to dive into deeper. You've already mentioned, Martin and Kev, you've got podcasts coming out, so I'm sure, like, as always, the winter break's going to go by in a flash, just like I feel like this season has. But it's always such a privilege to be a part of it. I always get to this point in the year and get rather reflective, hence why I'm a bit worried about how I'm going to be tomorrow, because I wonder if everything's going to hit me all at once, like Vettel leaving, yes, Ricciardo leaving, end of the season, like all of that stuff. I think when you're still in it and you're still, you know, we're still sat here at 12:45 in the morning recording a podcast, that you don't really have the time to get reflective. But I mean the World Cup starting tomorrow, so I think the load of us that are staying out for testing are going to go find somewhere to watch that tomorrow in Abu Dhabi. So we'll keep ourselves distracted, no doubt.
Well, Vettel said he felt empty after the race, which is how I feel about 5:10 when I get a tap on the shoulder from my little one saying, "Daddy, I'm awake." Empty is how I feel, which is saying goodbye to Formula One. I've still got memories of you know, finishing off a triple header and sort of collapsing on a Monday, or I don't know, recording the podcast at 3 a.m. UK time after the US races. So I'm not feeling nostalgic yet about the season. I'm still slightly happy that I now get a couple of months not talking about race reviews. Kev, Ah, there we go. Right. That's 2022.
Honestly, don't know what you're
up.
All talking you're about, to be honest. I've got the Christmas double issue, and then I usually find some random retro thing to work on over December and January. Yeah, it's just mega. So, but no, it has been quite a long season. I won't miss the post Sunday Mondays are always quite good fun. Like putting the when you get to about 11 in the morning, already been on for 5 or 6 hours, and putting together like the F1 race results and putting soft new tyre, hard new tyre, soft new tyre for, you know, strolling 12th. That gets a little bit that can get a little bit long. But no, generally it's good. No, but the season review stuff is all sort of kicking in now. So. Yeah, now obviously our top 50 list, which has been going for 20 years now. So I look forward to having that debate and moving drivers around and then everyone telling us that we're wrong anyway once it comes out.
Pretty much. We look forward to the Autosports Awards if you're coming to it. I know all sorts of people in Formula One listen to this podcast. So if you are, you know, if you are lucky enough to be going, then enjoy yourselves. We will see you there. And yes, if you want to find out everything that's happening in the world of motorsport, you can check out autosport.com and, of course, motorsport.com, our sister site as well. Check out Autosport magazine every week. If you want to subscribe to that, it will drop through your letterbox on a Thursday morning. Perfect reading material and loving the pickies as well. The glorious images that we feature in the magazine. So thank you very much for listening to all of our season reviews this year. But as all of our guests have said today, plenty more to come before we break up for Christmas and New Year. Thanks for listening and we'll see you soon.
Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner. Mary redeemed a $50,000 cash prize playing Chumba Casino this year.
I was only playing for fun, so winning this was a dream come true.
Chumba Casino is America's number one social casino experience. It's serious fun. With over 80 casino-style games to choose from, you too could win life-changing amounts of cash. Be like Mary. Log on to ChumbaCasino.com and give them a whirl. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. The voice in the preceding commercial was not the actual voice of a winner.
Reach new career heights with University of Maryland's Robert H. Smith School of Business. Flexible MBA and MS options. GMAT and GRE not required. Learn more at go.umd.edu/smithschool. University of Maryland Smith School of Business. Inspired, fearless, unstoppable.
Sports Social Podcast Network.